Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. Give it all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all. So why don't
Ten minutes after 9 here on the West Coast. 10 minutes after 11 Central Time, where Greg Lotus lives. And Greg got bitched out by his mom. Tell everybody about your mother bitched you out, told you your connection sucked.
Yeah, well, that's why I asked you if it was coming in clear today. So because apparently my mom has had the computer on in Arizona, living the high life, going to the pool all the time, and she's got her little scooter, so she doesn't even have to walk. And she said that it was brutal and it kept cutting out, so she didn't enjoy it as much as she should have. So hopefully it comes in crystal clear today if she's listening. And I was going to say I missed her, but not after she complained to me.
Not after she aired your shit out?
Yes. My dad's nice, though. He just said, we worked through it.
Exactly. Sometimes you live with that. You could troubleshoot it and stop the whole thing. But you know what? Other times you just say, screw it, and you have to live with it. I did the weather from Saskatchewan a few minutes ago, and it's a little nippy up there. What's the weather? What's the weather in Grand Forks today?
Well, right now it's 32. Degrees we're going to go to a high of 42, and let's say it actually with the wind chill feels like 21 degrees, and then tomorrow we're expecting a high of 38,
nice,
and a low of 18, but we're supposed to get 4 to 6 inches tomorrow, which should be entertaining for my son's last football game of the season.
Nice.
Yes.
I want to ask you about have they played the whole season? Have there been any stoppages because of COVID and all of that stuff?
Yeah, there's been not for our team or for Lawson's team, the Red River Rough Rider.
Nice.
But the Crosstown School Central, they have been off for the last 2 weeks because they had a few kids test positive. Therefore, they shut down that program. And then there's been other games that have been delayed or they rescheduled based on some kids in Fargo or Bismarck having COVID and stuff like that. So the thing that has really changed is my daughter's volleyball schedule. Like two weeks ago, she was supposed to have a game on a Thursday or a Tuesday night. And 2 hours before the game or 3 hours before the game, it got canceled because one of the girls got her test results back at that time and had COVID. So that got canceled right like that. But it's really unique this year because most times or all the times Lawson would have to ride the bus to and from football games. That was mandatory.
Right.
But now it's the bus is available for only a select number of people because of social distancing. And now we have to drive them to and from the game. So it's kind of like weird. Olivia has to be there like 2.5 hours before the game because their coach wants to have them support the C team and the freshman team. And I'm like, oh my God. So we got to drive to Fargo for a 7 o'clock game. We got to leave the house at 3. Yeah. And then you got to wait around after, you know, until they get done there.
And there's no strip joints in Fargo.
Well, I wouldn't even care about that, but like, I don't even want to go to Shields because of the amount of people in there and COVID and all that crap. So I just end up, I don't know, sitting in my truck or listening to something or radio or doing something like that. Yeah, but although it is kind of nice driving home after the games, especially with Lawson talking a little football and stuff. Like last week, we didn't get home till, I don't know, 10:45 because we were down in Fargo. But, you know, just get to pick his brain and see what he sees. And since he's only a freshman playing football this year, he's had a lot of questions, and I'm pretty proud of that young man. He first freshman, and I think the coach said 20 or 25 years to start for Red River.
Well, so, but it's bigger than that. I mean, in terms of he plays offensive line. It's not like he's a fast maturing, you know, guy who plays a skill position where you're, you know, he's in a place where you don't see kids his age be able to handle guys physically, right, up front like that. That's not, yeah. I mean, you rarely do you see guys that young. So how big is Lawson though?
Well, and to tell you the truth, most of his snaps, he's starting on the D line first. He gets in on the O line, but yeah, that's why to me it's really something, because you talk about the physicality, and he's worked like so much on his punch and his get off, like getting out of his stance real quick, because he isn't quite as big as the rest of the guys yet. He's just now 6 feet and about 230 pounds. And he's 15, you know, he just turned 15. So, you know, so his brother, we have a growth chart on one of the walls in the laundry room. And, it's had all the kids on it. So we went and looked at it to measure him. And, since January, I think he's grown almost an inch and a half since January. Sorry, I'm letting my dog out. An inch and a half since January. But when we looked at where Peyton was at this time, he's well above where Peyton was at this time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but with him, you know, he goes to practice, and he didn't start his first game. He, in fact, right before his first game, I said to him, don't be surprised if you get in on defensive line, because it was an 80-degree day, and I know that kids, you know, the gas tank runs a little low when it gets hot out, and so don't be surprised if you get in on D-line. He goes, Dad, I hardly get in at practice on D-line, and this, I said, just don't be surprised. Well, for end of the first quarter comes, and I see him running onto the field, and I text Heather because she was sitting away from me. I like to watch the games by myself, and I said, here we go. And on his second play, he got a tackle for loss. Ooh. And so he kept playing and kept playing. Well, the next game he started and has started ever since. So it's kind of funny seeing him go against some bigger guys. But he goes to practice. Apparently he told me the other day without even knowing, he watches the most film out of anybody on the team, because you have to log in to watch the film. Oh. And I watch film with him to try to, and it's kind of hilarious, because he came up to me and said, Dad, I didn't realize what you can learn from watching film on other guys. And I said, yes, son, that's why you do it. You know?
Well, though, but especially watching it with, you know, with you. I mean, I remember watching baseball with my dad, and it was like we weren't even watching the same game. You know what I'm saying? You're watching it in high definition, 4K, in ultra slow motion, and he's watching it like regular. And all of a sudden, somebody who knows, right, because they've devoted their life to this study, begins to show you these things, and then you begin to see them, and it was one of the cooler experiences of my life, learning how to watch it and the nuances that professionals watch. You know, if you watch the baseball playoffs now, when you see those guys in the dugout, when you see them up on the rails watching, you would not believe the detail that they see. And that's the ability of a sudden, and now, I mean, you obviously raised Lawson since he's a baby. Now all of a sudden he enters into your world, right? Where you can have these kind of discussions that are pretty cool.
And what's, I never knew that, or the that actually, like, looking at it that way until I started watching, like, let's just say we got invited over somewhere to watch a game. And we'd be watching a game in front of a room full of guys, and the ball would be snapped, and I'd be like, "Oh shit!" And then the guys would be like, "What?" And then the ball carrier would be tackled for a loss or this that, and they're like, "What did you see?" And I'm like, "Well, the guard got blew up. He penetrated the B gap. The play was dead." And they're like, "What?" So they rewind it, and I'm like, "Okay, look at this." And because they're watching the ball all the time.
All right.
And that's the biggest mistake you can make. But what I was going to say with Lawson is that not only does he watch film, but his brother comes over because he works with myself and Peyton. Once or twice a week, minimal, aside from practice.
Well, tell everybody what Peyton, where Peyton is and what Peyton's doing. So,
yeah, Peyton plays football at the University of North Dakota. He's got a scholarship there, and he's a freshman, so he's young, but, he played at the same high school that Lawson plays at now.
But offensive lineman.
Yeah. Offensive lineman, so he knows what works and what doesn't work against him as a D lineman. So, we go in the backyard. I have a blocking bag and stuff, different things. And Lawson works on various drills with Peyton and moves, like a swim move, which defensive linemen use, a rip move and a push pull and all that kind of stuff. And he teaches them how to identify what an offensive lineman is doing. If he's really heavy on his hand, it's a run block, and you could use that his momentum and weight and height against him to sidestep and pull him down. Or there's a huge variety of things. So Lawson does that on his own. Like I have a rule in my house that I won't tell you. You have to work extra. You have to come ask me. And then I'll be happy to, I mean, I've been throwing balls to him. I remember, when he was really young, and my wife would say, "Why are you throwing the ball so fast to them?" When they were kids. And I said, "Because that is what's going to happen. That's where the ball's going to be when it's thrown to them. So why baby it now?" And I would throw lasers to them, and they would not complain. They would, and they'd catch the ball. And so when I see them, even though they're not skill players, but when Lawson or Peyton can pick up a ball and throw it 50 yards, with a tight spiral, or catch any ball around them, even though they're an offensive lineman or defensive lineman, it just brings a smile to my face.
Another question for you. Does your daughter, a volleyball player, do they wear masks at all when they play?
Only on the bench. When they're in the on the court, they don't have to wear a mask, but everywhere else they do. And they've been lucky. They haven't had any positive tests on their with their players, so it's a unique deal. I think they're like 10-3 now on the season, so they're doing pretty well. And I think they have an opportunity to maybe make it to state if they get their shit together at the right time and do well. It's nice to see. It's Olivia's favorite sport. I know your daughter plays it as well, but it's her favorite sport, bar none, volleyball is. And this is the last kick at the can because she's not good enough to play college volleyball.
When teams, will everybody play their whole schedule in the football season? How are they dealing with that? Teams playing two games in a week to make up for this stuff? Or
are you talking high school?
Yeah. How are they doing that?
No, they're just normal schedule.
So you said the kids were the school where my kids went to school, Central. They've been off for 2 weeks. So what are they doing with the games they were supposed to play? Will they make them up?
Well, they're looking at making them up. But right now, like, they scheduled East Grand Forks, which is not on their schedule, but they picked up that game only if they're clear of all the COVID protocols.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So,
but that's not that's not a conference game.
How
will they do the playoffs and stuff?
See, well, Central, I think they have only one win against Grand Forks,
it's not an issue.
And so, other than that, I don't think they'll be able to reschedule the games. Although, if there is time, they might be able to slip one of them that or get back one of them that they lost.
Got it. But it's a moot point. So I guess okay. I was talking to somebody on the phone, and they were telling me how much they enjoyed listening to you, and they said, I've got a question though. Greg's been through some tough stuff in his life. The very first would be your injury. You rise to become a player in the National Football League. An injury leaves you disabled for the rest of your life. In the midst of that, your wife develops breast cancer. Of all the things that you've been through, what would you say has been the most difficult struggle?
I would say that the lack of control is the thing that I struggle with the most, because, you know, you pride yourself on goal setting and setting a task and achieving those tasks. You have an idea about, you know, and as far as timeline or commitment goes. And then when things happen to you, and the greatest of those would be seeing my wife with breast cancer and not knowing if she was going to survive. That was the most difficult. I would put that up there as number one, because you love someone so much that you would do anything for, but you can't physically or anything else. You really can't. And you're at the mercy of, the diagnosis and the doctors and everything else. And yeah, you could be supportive, and yeah, you could, you know, have a smile on your face and everything else, but it still doesn't help the problem. And I'm a type of person that if I want something, I'm going to chart a path and go down it and figure out a way to do that kind of stuff. With my injury, it was difficult. There was a lack of control there, but to me, it wasn't about losing a loved one. I lost the ability to play football, and I loved to do that. And one of my biggest dreams was to have, at the end of a game, to have the opportunity to go to the stands and see my family, whether it be two sons and a daughter or three daughters or whatever it was, but to be able to grab them from my wife and bring them on the field when their daddy had his pads on, and they got to see everyone cheering for the team, and then they can just run around on the field. Right. I always dreamt of that in my mind when I didn't want to work out, when I was tired, or when I was by myself running hills. I said, this rep or this sprint is for this game that I could go grab my kids. So that was up there, but surely it was the fact of the opportunity or the chance of losing someone that I cared for greatly.
You know, interestingly enough, this week we three guys come on yesterday, and we had a discussion about the philosopher Epictetus and his impact on the guy who would ultimately be the leader of the American prisoners of war at the Hanoi Hilton during the Vietnam War, a guy named James Stockdale. And Epictetus he wrote this. His model graduate is not a person able to speak fluently about philosophic principles as an idle babbler, but about things that will do you good if your child dies, if your brother dies, if you must die or be tortured. Let others practice lawsuits, others study problems, others syllogism. Here you practice how to live, how to die, how to be enchained, how to be racked, and how to be exiled. A man is responsible for his own judgments, even in his dreams and drunkenness and in his melancholy madness. Greg, what are your conclusions about, you know, about life and how you live when with those things out of your control?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there's one answer to it. But as I get older and older, I realize that there are so many things that impact you and what's in your control and what's not. And sometimes when I was younger, you know, you thought that you could manipulate the variables or at least hold them tight and that you were in charge. And as I live and experience more things, I realize that that's really not the case. And so I think for me, the best thing to do is to understand what I have an impact on and what I don't. And when I don't, sometimes I have to sit back and learn and take notes and understand how other people do it or the way they see things, because maybe in the future I could use what they're doing or the technique they're doing in order to benefit myself or my family, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, Epictetus was a slave, and he lived during the time of Nero. And he wins his freedom by becoming a philosopher. And he said, it's really interesting what you just said, because one of the things that he says is, you know, one of the great things you need to come to grips with in life is that there are things that you can control and things in your life that you will not be able to control, right? And then ultimately he says this: you can only be a victim of yourself. It's all in how you discipline your mind. Who is the master? He who has authority over any of the things on which you have set your heart? What is the result at which all virtue aims? Serenity. Show me a man who through sick is happy, who through danger is happy, who through prison is happy, and I'll show you a Stoic. You, my friend, are a Stoic. Don't even know it.
Well, I didn't know that was the end,
congratulations.
You know, I'll tell you the thing I pride myself on is, or one of the things I do is that I'm a good listener. And, you know, with the sports psych I do and with the people that I deal with, whether it be they play in the NHL or for the UND hockey team or swimming or volleyball or whoever comes to see me, you know, I listen to them. I have a good bullshit meter. Because kids today, they're not much changed from kids that when we grew up. They're still going to try to get shit by you. They're still going to try to bullshit. But when you can talk to them and tell them that you're basically fooling yourself a lot of times, they come with complaints about coaches or parents or about fellow players and this and that. But when you could talk to them and get them in touch with themselves and talk about that whole control issue, Mac, that sometimes you got to let this go, but you should hold fast when it comes to this area. It gives them a different perspective and lets them thrive, you know, lets them thrive in their sport. And so I didn't know the outcome of this ending or whatever, this philosopher or whatever, but I try to talk to people and to deal with people the way that I would like to be treated, the way that, but I don't bare my soul very often. You know, I don't let every detail out, but to those I love and respect and value what they have to say, believe me, there are people that are way smarter than me, without a doubt.
No, there's not. Come on, you don't believe me.
Well, listen, I still rub it in my kid. I still rub it in my kids' faces that I got 30 on my ACT. So
there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Mm-hmm. No, you know, it's interesting because Admiral Stockdale, right? I mean, he's tortured, and I mean, his experience in the Hanoi Hilton is horrible, and he leads there, and he creates the rules and all of that, and they come home with a 4% rate of PTSD. Everybody else comes home with 30% from Vietnam, who wasn't a prisoner, comes home with 30% rate of PTSD. How could that be possible?
But no, it doesn't make sense.
Right? But what happened in that captivity, what they had to go through, how they helped each other, mentored each other, and ultimately transformed each other, transformed themselves too. And when they came back, they were different human beings, and their families were told that, hey, when they come back, they're going to be infantile. They've been tortured. They've been kept in solitary confinement. Some of these guys for years, they won't be the person you knew. They've come back. You know, Stockdale was Ross Perot's vice presidential candidate. John McCain's one of them. And these guys have written a record of excellence. It's amazing. But its roots were them being destroyed, them having these external circumstances, their captivity imposed on them, and losing all control, and then how you deal with that. And so your words are, and again, I didn't think we would get into this conversation today, but but it happens to so many people, and a lot of people lose their way when they're not in control, and because it's not the easiest thing in the world to deal with, that all of a sudden life imposes its burden on you, and then how do you deal with it? How do you get to a good place? How do you get to a happy place? How do you find joy in your life once those things happen? And those are
so
all.
So do you think you're born with it, or do you think you learn it?
To quote you from a few minutes ago, I think both. I think some people are born with it, but I think everybody can learn it. The problem is too few of us, I think, and it was interesting what you said about kids. You have a good bullshit meter, as do I. So many people accept the bullshit excuses that kids put up. It would be like if when we were kids, if we were bullshitting and lying, like, oh, how did that backhoe get into that house? I don't know, Mom. We were just on our bikes, like, next to it, and then it just happened. Like, oh, okay, Greg, thanks. You know, thank you for being so honest with me. No problem, Mom. If our parents looked at us and said, I'm going to give you 2 seconds to tell me the truth, yeah, we started it.
Yeah,
I didn't. Greg did, but he threw it into gear, and we thought it was going in reverse, but it went forward, and we knocked the house down. Right?
I moved the bucket. He did the pedals.
Exactly, because I couldn't reach him. And so when you look at them and you call bullshit on them, my experience is that they're almost relieved, and you say, "Don't shit me, okay? Let me tell you where you're at." And let me tell you where you can go if you want to. But you're the only one that drives this boat, okay? So if you don't want to go there, then you can stay in this land of shit where you're at. But if you want to go, I can show you the path, but you got to be able to deal with the truth, because if you can't, then we don't have a base for a conversation. And so to me, if you'll do that, people, my experience all the time is that they want to go there, but so many people are afraid to have an honest conversation because they don't want to hurt somebody's feelings.
Well, and you bring up a good point, and I have an example, because I'm dealing with this girl athlete that says, you know, every time I go into the game, I play awesome. But then I go on long spells where coach doesn't put me in. So I go watch a game or multiple games. And so I see her get in and play, and then out of, like, say, 9 sets of volleyball, she plays 3 of them. So 33%, basically. Right. And so I text her and this and that, and she goes, hey, when I was in there, I played amazing, and I don't know why coach isn't putting me in there, this and that. And so I say, okay, we're going to meet. And when we met, I said, I don't know where you're getting this I'm playing amazing from. And I started to pull the clips. I had them marked on the timesheet. And I pulled this clip and this clip and this clip of her being on her heels and missing a ball or mishitting this or doing this on defense. And I said, this is what your coach is seeing. You have a view of the way you think it's going, but the most important view is what your team and what your coach is seeing, which is this. That's why you're playing 33%. So what I would recommend is this. I said, I want you to write down what you think you can improve on after you watch these video clips. And then I want you to present it to coach in this fashion, because she was disappointed and she went up to the coach and the coach said, I will talk to you on Monday, basically is what she said. So she went on Monday, went to the coach with a well-articulated plan saying, coach, after watching video and discussing it and looking it over, I know that I was deficient on defense. I was on my heels. I missed this ball on this play, this, and this. I can do much better. And if given the opportunity, and to be back in the lineup, not only will I prove that I belong, but I will prove that it will be very difficult for you to take me off the court. And the coach said to her, I cannot believe how mature you're dealing with this and the way you came to me about this. Most kids would come, cry, complain, what's going on, this and that. But you have a well-articulated plan. You obviously know where you're going and how you're going to get there. Next game, she's starting. The coach put her up there to start. Not only did she start, she never got off the court for the five sets that she was playing. And then after that practice that she went and talked to her beforehand, the coach made it a point to come over to her after practice and said, that was one of the best practices I've seen you for the year, and I just want to tell you how much I appreciate our meeting before the practice.
Well, and you know, the beauty of all of that, the true beauty of all of that is, you know, embodied in the saying, you know, I give a man a fish, I feed him for a day, I teach a man a fish, and you're teaching her problem solvings and an approach to life and conflict that will serve her for the rest of her life. And that's to me the incredible sadness of young people that are attached to their computers, that don't get out, that aren't involved in whether it be theater or any kind of extracurricular.
Band doesn't matter.
Right. Does not matter. That where you get mentored and you get coached and you get pushed and you have these conversations, because essentially what you're doing as a coach is you're teaching them how to fish in life. And so I think it's.
But they're afraid of conflict, Mac. And then what's even worse is when they don't approach it head on. They sit.
Who is they? The kids or the coaches?
Yes,
or both.
Kids. The kids, or even young adults. They're afraid of conflict. Right. Then they sit by themselves. And they wonder and they dream up scenarios like, oh, maybe she hates me. Maybe they don't like my parents. Maybe this, maybe that. And they're making up stuff that really has no bearing on the situation. And also, when you do come face to face with someone, then you could hear it from their mouth as to what the deficiencies are or what you can improve on. So there is no doubt. There is no room for error, and you can make amends or you can go on a path that crushes those deficiencies or doubts and work on them. So it's kind of taking a shortcut to a solution But that shortcut doesn't seem like a shortcut to them because it involves face-to-face. It doesn't involve texting or Snapchatting or whatever the hell the kids do these days, because they don't want the personal interaction. And when I talked to this girl and I said, listen, you have to go talk to the coach. Well, I don't know if coach wants. I said, I don't care what they want. You're saying they don't want it, but you don't know. And I said, without talking to them, you will not get relief. You will not get to the root of the problem. And then after, you know, they say, oh, I'm so glad I did it. And this, I said, this is a great step for you, but in the future, whether it be your job or a teacher in college or whatever the case may be, personal interaction is the best way to solve a goddamn problem.
Why is that? Why are they hearing about that from somebody who's not connected with their life in terms of education or athletics?
Because it's easier just to set a kid with a tablet and tell them to go downstairs or video games and not parent them, or tell them to turn the TV off when they're eating dinner, or make them do chores or this and that. Go pick up the dog poops in the yard. I don't know why, but we're getting away from that. And the kids, the sense of entitlement is astronomical. Never mind instant gratification now, because they can get whatever they want, whatever they need via one click of a button. Right. They don't have to work the paper route for 10 weeks in order to raise enough money to buy a bike. You know what I mean? Right. I mean, Mac, come on, man. I know we had some work when we were young, and our parents had it more difficult time. But, you know, asking our kids to do, or what we ask our kids to do with the laundry and cleaning the toilets, or, you know, the dog stuff or whatever. I mean, I think we're not in the norm. I think we're outside of it, because they keep telling us, oh, our friends don't have to do this. You know?
No, let me tell you, and it's the path to building better people. And but again, I think the beautiful thing about it is you're giving a gift, because that will affect the way they approach conflict and when what they believe they're doing doesn't, you know, fit the outcome of any boss or any kind of situation like that. And it's I mean, it's great stuff. It's great stuff.
Yeah, but believe me, they don't think of it as a gift the way you're giving it.
No, that initial experience with it. And then all that comes after that is good. And just this week, Colleen got a new job. She'd been looking for a job. She works for me, helping me. You know, Colleen does construction. I built a studio for the YouTube thing that I'm getting going. And so Colleen helped build a studio, and she helps me, and she helps on my website and all that kind of stuff, you know, but she's looking for a job. And so she gets hired by a place called PacSun that's in this really nice mall. And she wanted to work there. So the first day she goes, and, you know, and before she left, I looked at her and I said, hey, you go there, you work your ass off. All right. So she comes home. I said, how's this work? She goes, it was fine. I was in the back, you know, unpacking boxes. And I said, so how did that go? She goes, well, there was 8 boxes and I got through 6 of them. And I said, why didn't you get through all 8 of them? She said, well, there's just a lot of stuff and you've got to do this and you got to do that. I said, okay. And she said, but I did my best. And I said, okay. And so she called me, what's today, Friday? She called me Wednesday. Dad, guess what?
What? I got the other 2 boxes.
No, the boss told my friend who works there that Colleen's really a hard worker, right? I couldn't believe how much of that stuff she got done the other day.
She got done 6 boxes. You're bitching, and the boss is loving it,
right? And so, but you know, it's just. And I remember her and I talking. I said, you know, John was 15, and he went to work for Kim at Kim's restaurant, Sanders,
washing dishes.
And I took him the day we drove there. I looked at him and said, "Hey, look, grown men support families doing this. You're not too good to do this kind of work. You go there, right? and you'd be the best dishwasher that they've ever seen in their lives. So that was like Friday, because he worked on Friday and Saturday nights. So on Monday, I think I either ran into Kim or wound up talking to him. And I said, hey, how is John? How'd he do? And he starts laughing. He goes, my guys were like in awe of your kid. I said, why? Like, that's not a good thing normally. And he's like, that kid came in, he put his head down, and he washed dishes like a maniac.
Tasmanian devil.
Exactly. And he still will tell stories about John and the way John washes dishes. And, but you know what? That's the path to produce good adults, right? And now where's John today? John's a company commander of 150 Marines, and they're in Norway someplace. I don't know where he's at because he didn't say goodbye to me like when he left. I saw a picture. I saw a picture of him with his son, with like he's got three bags in tow, and his son next to him. I'm like, he left. What the hell? Like, it's like normally you say goodbye when you leave. I guess not these days, but whatever. But he's a good man. He's, you know, he's got a wife and he's got a kid. He's got his own home, right? But the path is a simple, time tested path, and that is hard work. You know, people that will be honest with you, and when you come up short, they'll tell you. And then you somebody has given you the gift that you gave that girl, which is, this is how you get through that. This is how you get to the place you want to go, and you cannot allow somebody who doesn't see things that you see to define who you are, because you're going to face this in your life. I mean, she will tell that story long after both of us are off the planet. She will tell the story about this guy, Mr. Lotus, right, as she impacts her kids' lives and other kids' lives, which is pretty cool.
And also, too, the message of when stuff gets hard, when it gets difficult, it's way too easy to quit, to throw in the towel. And the perseverance that you show, the ability to problem solve, and you know, just getting down to the hard work of it and finishing, even though you didn't think you could, or you thought it was impossible, whatever the case may be. But I really think, Mac, that teaching the youth, or anybody for that matter that I come across, that not to quit.
Oh, my
that,
God.
And a lot of times people say, oh, I did my best. But in reality, they set their standards way too low. Right. And when you can blow away what some people think, like I see it in the weight room all the time, or vertical jumping or whatever, they think, oh, I can only get this. But then all of a sudden they're pumped, they're amped, they got their team behind them, and they jump an extra inch and a half, which is crazy for vertical.
Right.
And they thought, and the look on their face is like, oh my God. And I'm like, yes, exactly. You thought you could only do this, but look what you actually did. You blow away your own expectations. So sometimes people set the bar way too low for themselves.
Oh my God. And it's just, yeah. And if you just raise your kids, just don't quit, and watch how far you go. Catherine tells me this story. You know, now my kids, like, and you look, you know, your kids probably already do, but my kids like use my lines now. So Catherine's working and she's doing well in her job. And so her boss was talking about something about, you know, about toughness and whatnot. And Catherine says, well, my dad's got a saying, I don't know that I should say it, but it has a lot to do with being tough. And her boss looks at her and she said, and the boss says, I like some of the things you said your dad says. What does he say? And Catherine says,
like, oh no!
Life's not for pussies, and so the guy looks at Catherine and says, "I like your dad." And Catherine says, "Well, it's true."
Right? In small doses, I like your dad.
Exactly. And so, but you know, again, you know, you think your kids aren't paying attention, but what happens when they persevere? All of a sudden, they look around and they're like, "I'm the only one standing." And I'm getting recognized, and all I did was not quit. That's a pretty low bar, but holy shit. Like, God, I'm not going to tell him that he's right, because I hate when that happens. But
it's actually sad that you say that. Like, hey, I'm here standing and no one else is here because all I did was not quit. I mean, that is a low bar.
Oh, right.
It's a sad state of where we're at back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I used to, when I lived in Grand Forks, I mean, I would go speak and I would tell kids, look, you want to get promoted, show up 5 minutes, have your uniform or whatever you wear, be clean. I'm not telling you to iron it, but just don't show up with the whole thing wrinkled and have a smile on your face and be ready to work. If you do that, you'll get promoted. And I used to see kids in like in the supermarkets and Hugo's that's in Grand Forks. And I remember Colleen looking at me saying, and Colleen's like 4 or 5, like, Dad, that kid's staring at you. And I said, hi. And they're like, hey, Mr. Mack, I heard your thing at Red River. And I said, yeah. And like, I did what you said, you know, because I have a part-time job. Yeah. I got promoted like within like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
See, I said, if you keep doing that the rest of your life, you'll be the CEO of something. That's how low the bar is in our culture. So just be a little bit better and you'll never have a problem getting promoted in your life.
And never mind if you really overachieve. And like,
right.
I love Coach Hackstall when he was the head coach here at UND Hockey. And the bus, he'd say, the bus is leaving at 9 o'clock. And if you weren't on the bus at 8:50, the bus would take off. Because if you're not on hack time, which is early,
right,
you're late.
You're late.
And it would go. And he would have no problem doing it. But everyone knew, like, I don't see that, like, the whole deal with your shift starts at 8 o'clock in the morning and you're there at 7:59 to punch in. You're not ready to work. You're rushing in. You know, you're not ready. You're not mentally ready to go, whether you're stacking groceries or working on the stock exchange or whatever the hell it is. It doesn't take too much to be prepared and to show up early, you know, like you say, with your uniform, maybe not pressed and starched, but at least it doesn't have a Cheeto stain on it on the top collar and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, with our kids and the way we try to teach them, and obviously they're going to mess up and make mistakes and do that kind of things. But I'm not having to bail my kids out of jail as of yet. So I think I'm doing okay.
No, you won't. And you won't because, and again, is there anything more fun than watching that whole process? You know, to me, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. Now, Patrick is moving, just bought a house, moving. And, like, Patrick was never the most guy, the guy that was most fired up to help with projects around the house.
No,
all he's doing. And I find it so funny. And he's telling me while he's moving, he goes, God, like, I'm moving. And I'm none of what I'm moving is mine. I said, get used to it, bro. It only gets worse. I said, and your paycheck will be like that, too. Like, I earn this money. I spend none of it on myself. It all goes to other people. Welcome to the rest of your life. But you know what? I mean, you know, how much more proud can you be than when you see, you know, your kids getting out in the world and them doing good things and having an impact on other people and want to give. But it all comes with spending time with them and all the things that you teach your kids, you know, when you're just on those car rides to different places, going to the dump, cleaning the garage, you know, when you're just shooting the shit with them, all the things you enforce over the years, if you're willing to go there, you know, you produce great human beings. I've got an email question that I know our time gets short towards the end of this. I got somebody just sent me a text message. The best piece of cold weather gear that you have, other than your boots or a jacket?
Oh, that's easy. That's my Lon Johns, which is basically like you put your underwear, your boxers on, wherever you wear, and then I have this one piece Lon John that goes, you know, you put your legs in, and then goes up to the top too. So you button it up and it has a quick door shitter on it. So you could, if you had to use it, it's like two buttons on the back to put down the flap and same with the front. But when you bend over, it doesn't, obviously it covers your back because it's a one piece. And that has been with me since I think the end of high school or the beginning of college. And if I'm going out hunting or anything in the cold weather, I have to have those on because it's like a suit of armor, although it's like a fat Superman, but it's still a suit of armor for me. And you need those, and it's great, especially when you're done for the day, whether you're ice fishing or whatever, you could gear, you take off all your snow pants and your boots and everything, and you could sit at the table and just wear that, you know, because it's kind of like pajamas for a big man, you know?
Mine is kind of, it's a derivative of what Greg's is, because Greg made a comment when we were talking about this earlier, and it's like, so when your jacket rides up and you're outside, one of the great miserable experiences, the blast of Arctic air, right, hitting skin. And it just pisses.
And it goes all the way up your back to your neck.
Right. And so his long johns prohibit that. Mine is a neck gaiter. And so you have your jacket on, and most of the time, people with neck gaiters, they put them like between on top of their jacket, and they kind of sit up, and air gets underneath them. And so I had one that if you cut it right in a line that goes up like from your shoulder blades to your earlobes, if you cut it so it lays flat underneath inside your jacket, and then you zip your jacket to enclose the gaiter, you are completely encased, like a little caterpillar. And you can pull that up, like if you wear a baseball hat outside or whatever kind of hat, you can pull that up to the crown of your head. You put your hat over that, and you are snug as a bug in a rug.
In a rug.
Rug. Yes.
I always use the snug and a bug in a rug. But I was – one of the things you said earlier when you said, I love it when my kids use my lines. And it just brings a smile to my face when I can overhear them talking.
Right.
And it's my exact line or something that I always say, and they're using it. I just snicker. I just do. But when they try to use it against me, and I look at them and I go, hey, that's the sincerest form of flattery. When you imitate your dad, I mean, you know, you can't use my words against me. I said, why don't you be original and think of your own words? And they're like, I can't. You got that one. And, oh, it's so funny.
I know. Here's somebody sent this text message. Hey, Mac, I was listening a couple of weeks ago. Greg's a foodie. I know you're not. But I'd be curious, do either one of you guys have a way that you bake vegetables in order to consume more healthy things? Baked vegetables, Greg, do you do that? I mean, that's kind of an Italian thing, isn't it?
Well, no, Italian's more of a, like the garden stuff, we pickle a lot of stuff, you know, like cauliflower, carrots, beans, stuff like that, that's pickled. Baked vegetables is tough because, you know, a lot of times I'd rather saute them. Saute them is high heat, but I use very little butter, or I just use Pam, the cooking spray. And so you only do it to soften them up a little bit, but you still get the crunch. So if I buy the bulk vegetables like the green beans, cauliflower, broccoli, stuff like that, then I'd rather saute them so that it maintains the flavor and only basically softens them up a little bit rather than – like if you bake them, they're too soft for me. So and I – to consume more vegetables in this house as far as the Italian goes – we eat a ton of salads. Like my wife gets the packet of Zesty Italian in the dry thing and mixes the oil and vinegar, and we always have that on hand. But the Buttercrisp lettuce is what my kids are on a kick for now, the Buttercrisp. And also I make this pork mixture with like soy sauce and sesame oil and hoisin sauce together and make lettuce wraps out of them.
Whoa.
And you add like julienne carrots and onions and different things in the lettuce wrap, and my kids devour them like it's a cheeseburger.
Lettuce wraps. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, so you take away the bun, basically, right. So you can get more veggies. But we use that butter crisp lettuce or butter lettuce that has this big leaf. You buy it like basically a whole head of it. It usually comes in a container. And you could use regular lettuce too, but it doesn't have the flavor that butter crisp does. But you should, if you look up lettuce wraps, there's countless recipes for that. But as far as baking vegetables, I'm not a fan of them because it gets too soft and too soggy. And then it's almost like a chore to eat the mac, you know? So I'd rather saute them.
Got it. Interesting enough, about a month ago, my daughter-in-law is an incredible foodie, John's wife.
Yeah.
And I called her and I said, because she made, she did that. And I hadn't eaten vegetables like that very often. So I said, Susie, what'd you do to the vegetables that day? And they were those little Italian potatoes. And they some broccoli and I think some asparagus. And she said, and then she did another thing with Brussels sprouts. It was delicious. But she said, that's easy. She said, just a little bit of olive oil. And then she said, what seasoning do you have? I said, well, I have a little bit of garlic salt, salt and pepper, Montreal steak seasoning. She said, use
that's
that.
That's huge,
She said, use that. And she said, throw the potatoes in first, 20 minutes, and then throw the other veggies in there for about another 20 at 400, and they'll be awesome. And, I mean, I'd never done it, so I just followed her directions.
The easiest, like if you like
and
asparagus.
And they were good.
If you like asparagus or Brussels sprouts, it's one of the easiest way, except your peas smells really bad because you eat asparagus. But asparagus is easy, especially like where you live and constantly having at the farmer's market. You get them, you chop off whatever, an inch and a half to whatever on the stem of them, and you throw them on a sheet pan, 400 degrees, put some olive oil on them, roll them around in your hands so they all get coated, and a little bit of salt and pepper. Put them in the oven for 400 degrees for 8 to 10 minutes. The kids, I have to get two heads or two packs of asparagus because they go nuts for that. And then my wife makes a Brussels sprout one where she puts in the oven and they get dried and crispy and then puts a balsamic glaze on them, balsamic vinegar.
Yes.
Holy shit. It's like potato chips, honestly. Like, she put them on the counter, and we kind of passed by. It was Peyton and I and Lawson. And she said, try this. And we put them in her mouth. We just sat there and ate the whole pan. It was that good. So, like, when you have something that good for a vegetable, you remember it.
Right. The do you have a Brussels sprouts recipe? I never ate it. I want to say Susie sent me a text with a Brussels sprout recipe. I was shocked because it was like the simplest recipe in the world. But she said balsamic vinegar. Oh, super simple. Brussels sprouts. Let's see.
That's the one.
Chop the fibrous ends off, cut them in half, toss them in olive oil and garlic salt. Roast for 425, blah, blah, blah. Shake the pan halfway through. I like to top them off with balsamic reduction.
Exactly.
Reduction or grated Parmesan cheese.
Yep. That's exactly what Heather did.
Wow.
It was fantastic. But see, I think the most simplest thing is not to mess with food. Like, the best dishes are like pasta carbonara, bucatini carbonara is one of the things my kids absolutely love. So I get pancetta, which is a uncured Italian bacon, so it's not smoked. I render it down in a pan. I chop it up. Put it. You can go to any deli and get a big, thick thing of pancetta, cut it into tiny cubes, put some olive oil in a pan, render it down. That means cook it till it gets crispy. And on the side, I have a couple cloves of garlic that are finely chopped. I put that to the side. But in the meantime, I'm boiling some water, and I get the bucatini pasta, which is like a spaghetti noodle, but it has a hole in the middle. So it's like a straw, mini straw. It sounds crazy, but that's what it is. So anyway, I cook the bucatini until it's a little bit before al dente. Al dente means tooth feel in Italian. And I dump it out, the water, but I save the water. And meanwhile, I have, for every pound of pasta, I have 6 egg yolks. And I mix the egg yolks with grated Parmesan cheese, and I just stir it up right in a bowl to make like a slurry. And then I take the pasta water, and I put it in with the egg yolks and the cheese. Okay? It sounds hard, but it's very easy. It's only a few ingredients. And then I put the pancetta that I render down, and I put the garlic in there for one more minute, just because if you put garlic in early, it burns and it tastes like sour mess. And then I put it all together. So the egg yolks, the cheese with the pasta water, and that's my sauce. And that is bucatini carbonara. My kids go absolutely donuts for it. They want it. They say, well, if we're having this people over for supper, can we have bucatini? And I'm like, okay, I'll make it. And it is so easy, Mac, but it is so good.
Really? I've never had it.
Yeah, well, you're missing out, let me tell you. Just look it up, bucatini carbonara.
All right, I'll look it up. What are you doing this weekend?
Today I got a meeting with a hockey gentleman a little bit here, and then tomorrow, 12 o'clock noon, is my son's last game. We're expecting 3 to 6 inches of snow, so that'll be entertaining to watch. Hopefully I can park my truck close to the track and watch it from 70 degrees in my vehicle.
Nice. What about the, do you want to say goodbye to your mom? And, your audio sounds fantastic, just so you know.
I don't know if my mom's listening, but if she is, I wish, you know, she'd bake me a chocolate cake. She used to bake me one every year for my birthday.
I remember.
But she, yeah, since she's gotten a little bit up in age, she said, oh, your wife can make one, and or your daughter can make one. And I'm thinking, you want to pawn it off to my wife and daughter when you're my mom? You gave birth to me, and you won't even make me a chocolate cake. It's so sad, man.
It is. No, I feel bad.
Yeah. For you. I think we should just crush her email with a whole bunch of make great a cake. I should give out her email address. Maybe I'll do that next week.
Child neglect. I mean, exactly. Just because he's older doesn't mean he's not your child.
No, you should still care for me as much as you do.
Doesn't mean you shouldn't neglect him.
That's right. So you know what? She should start baking a cake now, and she could send it overnight via FedEx.
Oh, yeah. That's the whole industry. Everybody does it.
It's like Gold Belly for Mrs. Lotus.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you next week.
All right, bud. See ya.
All right. Ciao.
That's quality radio. And that'll do it on a Friday. Hope you have a great weekend. Yeah, I didn't anticipate the Socratic discussion busting out today. Interesting. No, he's a great friend and a great guy. Greg is. And he's a stoic. Didn't know it. If you're just tuning in hour one, talk about kind of a crazy week that I don't know. It seems to so illustrate the unfairness of the way things go. You know, the media is now an advocate. You have guys who are renowned intellectuals and scholars that can't get something published because it doesn't agree with the social media narrative. So now social media companies are dictating what people in this country get to hear and what they don't get to hear. Honestly, I mean, it's crazy. The tone and tenor of two debates last night, vastly different. And yet, something that's as intellectually, I would say, dishonest as the 1619 Project has the biggest sounding board that you could have because it, right, it lines itself up with the poetic narrative that is being sold via social media. So talk about that. Talk about the filibuster and how the Democrats who blew it up years ago, I think 2013, Harry Reid, who I despise, we talk about him, and how it's coming back to haunt them. Talk about race and gender in the Marine Corps, and had a discussion about that yesterday with Lynch, Kenny, and Costantini, and talked about instinctively what I thought to be true. Then I went up and looked up the data, and lo and behold, in my opinion, and here's the interesting thing about it. We had a kind of a text message discussion. To me, what you see is general officers for the Marine Corps, black, are 7%. Nationally, they're 13% of the population. So they come in at about 5%. So over time, they're promoted at a greater rate than their peers. And so to me, the story is the Marine Corps does its best to promote and to steer its own demographics to a better place with blacks. Hispanics, not so much. They join as officers at 8%. As general officers, they're only 3.4% of the force. So blacks grow, Hispanics shrink. Interesting. And so, but the truth is this, that part of the population, the minority population that is extremely high end, that would be CEOs of companies, they have a lot of choices. Those that would opt for the military, the competition for those among all four services, incredibly keen. The question is, how do you get more of them? And so the question that we got to in our discussion yesterday was, well, why doesn't the Marine Corps tell that story? Why doesn't the Marine Corps say, if you look at us, if you look on the enlisted side, at the lower enlisted ranks, the Marine Corps is 11% black. But at the higher enlisted ranks, the Marine Corps is 19% black. So, I mean, there's a case, you know, we do our best to reward and promote. Hispanics come in at about 20%, both greater, right? So while the nation is 29% black and Hispanic, the Marine Corps is 39% black and Hispanic at the senior levels of its staff and CO. So when you cherry pick data, and there is no blowback to it, I don't understand why the Marine Corps doesn't tell the full story. Well, let us tell you the whole story about us and where we find huge challenges. And we're trying to do better, but it's not an easy space to compete against. So I talk about that. So on this Friday, have a great weekend. Most importantly, don't be afraid to change somebody's life. Of all the things that you could take away from the show, I would hope that that would be consistently the thing. So, on a Friday, All Marine Radio, out.